Okay, we're still doing our lessons on relationships, and I hope you've enjoyed them. I hope they've been worthwhile to you for relationships. I hope they've been beneficial in looking at different aspects. Tonight's our last one, and we're going to talk about relationship do's and don'ts. Specifically, we're going to talk about do's and don'ts from the Bible perspective. Not necessarily what I think, but we're going to just look at some Bible verses and see how they apply to things that we should do and things we shouldn't do in relationships. I think all along what I've tried to present has been biblical and from biblical base. But this last lesson is just tying all those verses together and just putting them in a single lesson and just looking at the verse and say, okay, what does this say we should do or what does this say we shouldn't do in a relationship? The first thing I want to point out is it's kind of interesting when I was putting together information for this lesson, looking up verses and different resources that I looked at, I ended up with 6 don'ts and 7 do's. Now that's kind of interesting from this standpoint, not that I forced it to that, but and not that we probably couldn't come up with more don'ts and less do's and vice versa, but I did find it curious that there was 6 don'ts and 7 do's. When you look at biblical numerology, the study of numbers, numbers do mean something in the Bible. Now, I understand we can get carried away with numerology, and I'm not going to hang my hat on this, but I thought it was kind of interesting. What does number 3 mean in biblical? What's the importance of number 3? Does it mean anything?
Trinity.
Sure. Represents the Trinity. What does the number 1 mean? Does it have any significance? Unity, one standing for God, 3 and 1. It also talks about unity for the church, those kinds of things. What does number 7 mean?
Complete or perfection.
So it's kind of interesting. There were 7 do's and there were 6 don'ts. What does number 6 mean? Biblical numerology. Somebody know?
Man.
More specifically, sinful man. Man that's not complete. And so it's just kind of interesting. Now, I know at the end you're going to be able to say, well, what about this do or what about this don't? But anyway, I just thought it was kind of interesting that when I had them all in the list, you know, I just thought, well, that's kind of... So I counted and it happened to be 6 and 7. So, okay, so we're just going to get right into these. I think that we had done an introduction for our introduction verse about... reconciliation of relationships, and every time I've done that verse, I think you probably kind of beat that verse to death. So we're going to just get right into the don'ts. There's 6 don'ts. The first one is don't be unthankful. Why is that important in a relationship? Think that's important at all? Remember what we talked about? I did a slide that talked about good relationships are positive how many times and negative how many times? If we're always negative, if we're never thankful, that's going to affect the relationship, isn't it? The verse is Romans 1, 21-22. Because that, when they knew God, they glorified Him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. It's kind of interesting that Romans, the first chapter, the progression of how God turned sinful man over to their own imaginations and kind of disowned them, that one of the steps of their progression was their not being thankful. That's a pretty important thing. And I'm sure you've been around people that have not been thankful, that are unappreciative. They're not very nice people to be around, are they? People who expect things, people who think that they are owed things. Being thankful is an important trait, so don't be unthankful. Don't be contentious. What does it mean to be contentious? What does contentious mean?
Stirring up trouble.
Some people like trouble. Some people thrive on it. In relationships, I actually know people who, that if things are at peace, they'll do something because they can't be content with peace. They can't be content, and they like trouble, and they try to stir things up. We really need to be careful about that. It's not going to make for a good relationship, is it? Proverbs 21:19. I'm sorry, ladies, but I just had to use this verse. It's better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry woman. Is this the other one? This is the other one. The wilderness, you know, if she's bad enough, you'll go to the wilderness, right? It's better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than with a brawling woman in a wide house. No house is big enough with a contentious woman. I know it looks like picking on women, but I can tell you if it's a contentious guy, it's the same thing, ladies. You want to get out too. I mean, the point is not the gender, right? The problem is not the gender. The problem is the attitude of contention. And I know men who can be as contentious as a woman, and some are saying no, no, no. But it's not a gender. The thing is the attitude. And we understand that the don't, right? Boy, that's going to really create issues in any relationship. Thoughts? Yes.
It's very uncomfortable to be with somebody that says, what did you mean by that? Every time you say something.
Always questioning and always trying to...
You're afraid to say anything.
Yeah.
When someone's contentious and holds, you know, questioning everything you do, and you get to where you're not comfortable saying anything, and then you're not yourself, and you're walking on eggshells. You ever been in a relationship like that? Feel like you can't ever do anything right? Any other thoughts? Don't be bitter. What's bitterness?
What does it mean to be bitter?
Not forgetting a problem.
Yeah. Hanging on to it, just always being...
not necessarily mad, but just always frustrated. And there's a verse in Hebrews that talks about not allowing a root of bitterness to get a hold, and then it just gets bigger. You know, weeds can start really little, but if they get a root, a footing, they can just take over. And don't be bitter. Don't let that root of bitterness get started.
It doesn't have to be something. I mean, you may have every right to be in human perspective, every right to be bitter. I mean, somebody has wronged you, but the bitterness is eating you.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt them, does it? It doesn't bother them. Romans 3:14-17,
whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their ways. In the way of peace have they not known. How many people know the story of Ruth? That's a pretty neat story. She was a daughter-in-law, wasn't she? And her mother-in-law and father-in-law had moved to a foreign country, and she had married the son of Naomi, her mother-in-law, and one of the other young girls from this foreign land had married the other son. The father-in-law was killed, her husband and her brother-in-law was killed. What was left was the mother-in-law, Naomi, and Ruth, and the other daughter-in-law. And Naomi, being in a foreign land, decided she was going to go home to her own country. And she told her daughter-in-laws, you know, it's not your country. You go home to your country. Go home to your gods. You remember what Ruth's response was? Famous response. What did she say? Paraphrase, you don't have to do it word for word. What was the context of what
your
she
God
said?
Your God will be my God.
Yeah. Your people, my people. Your God, my God. What a wonderful relationship point that is. Everything that Naomi faced that was bad, Ruth faced that was bad, right? Naomi had lost her husband. Ruth had lost her husband. And so these two women had faced terrible trouble together. Now, at the end of the book of Ruth, Ruth ends up getting her life together. She gets married. She ends up being in the lineage of Jesus Christ, doesn't she? This is a foreign woman, a Gentile, in the lineage of Jesus Christ. That's an interesting thing. She had faced terrible hardship, and in the end, she was not bitter about it. Ruth is a great story, isn't it? A positive story. But what about Naomi? Do you know what she says when she gets home? She says, "No longer call me Naomi," and I think it's Ruth 4:4. But she says, "No longer call me Naomi," and the word Naomi means pleasant. No longer call me pleasant, but call me Mara. And Mara means bitter. She ended up being bitter, and she just stayed bitter. And she was so bitter, she wanted to make sure that everybody knew how bitter she was. And so she literally changed her name to Bitter. Isn't that interesting? You know, sad things, bad things, tragic things can happen to us and will happen to us as children of God. But we don't have to take on that tragedy. We don't have to become that. And that's what it's talking about here. Full of cursing and bitterness, that root of bitterness. We don't have to become what that is. And that's a really important thing. And, you know, it's no fun to be around somebody who's bitter and angry and upset all the time. That's a killer for a relationship. And if that's what we have, you know, it's a matter that we need to be praying about it. And I believe the Lord can take that bitterness and make it joyful. I think David struggled with bad attitudes. I don't know if it's bitterness, but in Psalms 51, he says, "Lord, restore unto me the joy of my salvation." He had some negative emotions that he was experiencing. And he says, "God, I'm tired of the negative stuff. I want the positive stuff." And God can restore that for us. Any thoughts? Don't be hateful. Titus 3:3, "For we ourselves also were sometimes foolish, disobedient, deceived, serving divers lusts and pleasures, living in malice, envying, hateful, and hating one another." Just hating people. Just being mean to people. You know, having a hateful attitude and always finding the negative in people. If you looked, very easily you could find something negative about me. Wouldn't take you long at all. If you looked really hard, you might find something positive. What benefit is it to emphasize the negative? What benefit is it to you to hate me? I'm not a perfect person. What good does that do? Hateful, hating one another. What a sad testimony. We ourselves, Titus is talking about, or Paul writing to Titus, talking about children of God who's had this attitude. You know, we've been there. It's not beneficial to relationships, is it? It is very destructive. And these are choices. We choose the attitude. You say, "Well, it's that person. If they would change, I wouldn't have to hate them." It's a choice, isn't it? We have to remember everything that might be worth hating about them. Remember what Jesus said when the woman was caught in sin? He turned to the Jewish leaders and said, "Ye that are without sin, you go ahead and throw that first stone." You think there's things that are dislikeful about us? I'm sure there is. Don't say mean things. "Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessings and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Doth a fountain send forth at the place sweet water and bitter water?" You know, many of these we as children of God can struggle with, and I think this one, our mouth can really get us in trouble. We can say things that can be so hurtful. And sometimes we'll do it and we'll say, "Well, I was angry." It was the anger speaking. The saying is, "Sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me." I remember as a child being told that. And as an adult, come to realize that there are times I'd much rather have sticks and stones than the words. You know, my body will heal from the sticks and stones. My mind never forgets the words. We need to be so careful and think, if you're going to say something mean or something, sometimes we'll cloak it in constructive criticism. And I do believe constructive criticism can be good. But don't cloak a mean thing in something and then just say, well, I'm trying to help you. When really you're just disguising it in downright meanness. Everything we think does not need to be said. Think about that. Once it's said, you can't take it back. You can always say it tomorrow if it's that important. Sometimes the best thing we can do when we think something has to be said, say something nice and then think about it tomorrow and see if you still need to say it. I'm serious about that. When you think, I just have to say this, the positive thing, go ahead and say it. Think of something good that will help you if you're, and then tomorrow say, this is something I need to deal with. It works. But sometimes we say the mean thing and we can't take it back. Yes?
I think another thing that's worked for me is to always ask myself, what do I have to accomplish?
What an important question.
It's called a gut check.
Say that again. What's the question?
What do I hope to accomplish by saying what I'm going to say?
And often, what I really want to accomplish is just to make myself feel better for the moment.
And then the relationship is hurt for a long time. It's hard to heal over those things. What? Great question, absolutely. Thoughts? Yes?
One of the other ways that we cloak it sometimes is we cloak it in humor, making a little funny, sort of cutting remark, but we cloak it in humor. And it,
I was just teasing.
Yeah, I was just teasing.
But if you, and oftentimes the sad thing is humor has that little bit of truth, and if it's something sensitive, you're absolutely right. We have to be careful.
And sometimes, you know, that's something I can be guilty of, and meaning it, and I try really careful. That we have to be careful that we're not touching on something, and absolutely right. Just because it's funny doesn't mean it's not mean. And if it's mean, it's not appropriate. If it's hurtful to somebody we love, is the laugh worth it? And especially, you know, it's easy for husband, those that we feel comfortable with, because we know things that nobody else knows, and sometimes we're sharing things that shouldn't be shared, and humor, absolutely. Yeah.
It's hard, but especially when other people are involved. You know, we will, you know, make a joke about the spouse, you know, about something, you know, and maybe if we did it just between the two of us, it would be fine. It wouldn't be hurtful. But like you say,
with
other people, it's like you're, you know, shedding light on maybe a fault or just, not necessarily a fault, but just something, and then it puts them in a bad light and, you know, embarrasses them or whatever. And that's very mean.
And when we do that, it hinders trust. Mm-hmm. We don't feel, you know, it destroys, it can start to destroy trust. Absolutely. Absolutely. Thoughts? James 3:14-16.
But if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. So all this strife and anger and mean things, that's not from God. What does he call it? Sensual and devilish. Is that what we want to be known for? I want to be careful with what we say and how we say it and what our intent is. Don't stay angry. Ephesians 4:26, be angry and sin not. You know, anger isn't bad. It's what we do with it. We have to be really careful, though, that anger and other emotions is not a license to sin. A lot of times we'll say something and say, well, I was angry. Well, that doesn't make it go away. That doesn't make it better. It's not okay to get angry and use that as a motivation to do something wrong and sinful. That's not okay. The idea here is be ye angry. I had a wonderful example somebody had shared with me, and I'm not going to share any details, but somebody was struggling with how to help somebody and what a loved one had done. And they were angry at that person, and they were bothered by the fact that they were so angry at that person. And the question that I had was, well, has other people, you ever heard of anybody else ever doing that? And he says, well, of course. And I said, did it make you angry? And no. And why was that? He didn't have the emotion of love for the person. The person, what the person was doing, he loved them and they were doing something harmful to themselves, and it made him angry. And that anger put him in a position to try to stop the person from doing harm from themselves. Have you ever seen people only have the emotion of love and not ever discipline their children? They let them do things because they love them, you know, give them and never set any boundaries? That's not really love, is it? If we love our children, we'll also protect them. And sometimes when people are sinning, you know, there's nothing wrong with being angry at the sin. Now, there is a difference at being angry at the person and angry with the action, right? Sometimes we have to get that in our head, but we don't have to like the action and still love the person. Be angry and sin not, but staying angry, that's not okay. Don't let the sun go down. The point is, the illustration is, you know, you need to have dealt with that by the end of the day. So I'm sure that every married couple has never gone to bed angry, right? So what you do is you have to both stay up together. You can't go to sleep until you're over angry. Well, some of you might stay up for a while, but maybe that'd be a good thing. That would force you to deal with it, wouldn't it? And sometimes we don't deal with it, and we just stay angry and we ignore it, and that even makes it worse. The point is, you gotta deal with it. Ignoring it's not the answer either. I think that's part of the illustration, dealing with it. And it's never fun dealing with it. Sometimes makes you even more angry, doesn't it? It's not always an easy solution. Neither give place to the devil. This being angry and letting the sun go down in our wrath, this staying angry, giving place to Satan. And we talked about how Satan is right there, always ready to resist us. That's not a good thing. We don't want to give him any advantage, do we? Thoughts, comments? Okay, we're going to start the do's. Those were the 6 negatives. Any other negatives you want to talk about? I don't know if I covered them all, but I got my 6 in, so any others that you want to talk about? Okay, 7 positives. Do, think, positive. You know, that's a big one. We have a choice. Everybody does things that can annoy us. And when you're in a relationship, you can find something that will annoy you. If it's with your kids, it's with your parents, it's with your spouse, you can find something. The negative. None of us are perfect. We all do things, and some of it's not even a wrong and right issue. It's just different issue. Squeezing the toothpaste at the end or squeezing it at the top. Okay, some of you are going to say it's wrong to squeeze it at the top. Okay, I get the point. But it's what we choose to dwell on. Do be positive. It is a choice we make. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. Dwell on the positive. Those things which ye have both learned, received, and heard, and seen in me do, and the God of peace shall be with you. We have a choice on what we dwell on. You ever dwelt on something you probably shouldn't be dwelling on? Yeah, it's choice. It's a discipline issue, but it's a choice. Thoughts? Do be nice without keeping score. How does that work? That score thing is tough. You know, you as much as I know it's my responsibility to be nice and to care for my wife and do those things without expecting things in return, but there are some days when I just want to expect things. That keeping score. And one of the things that we do is that when I do something right, I never forget what I do. And it's easy for me to not ever give her credit for what she does do. And the other thing that we do is she'll get the basketball score and I get the football score. I get 7 points for anything I do and she'll get maybe 2. Actually, she usually just does 3 free throws, so she just gets 1 point. And so when we start keeping score, I'm always ahead. And that's not fair. Be nice. It's not my job to make her do her part. My obligation is to do my part. Use hospitality one to another without grudging, without keeping score. Okay, I have to entertain you. Okay, come over. Okay, you've had me over 7 times. Come over once. We'll have hot dogs, but come on over. Now, is that equal? You know, it's not supposed to be equal. We're supposed to do things nice, giving, without keeping score. We should be generous with one another. Thoughts? Be kind. With all lowliness, meekness, long-suffering, forbearing one another in love. Ephesians 4:32. And be ye kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. Boy, that's a killer verse. Sometimes we struggle with forgiveness, and we want to say, well, that person didn't ask forgiveness. Well, you know, they're going to do it again. Well, you know, and we make all these wonderful excuses, and when it comes to the end of the day, the real issue is we're to have the kind of forgiveness that God had. And we were forgiven when we didn't deserve it. And the right thing to do is extend forgiveness when it's not deserved. I know we have all of those categories and all of those things, kindness, tender-hearted, forgiving one another. Even as God forgave you and you don't deserve it, there are times in which people need to be forgiven and they don't deserve it. And that's okay.
Closest relationships, because we're safe and we're comfortable and we've used up all of our kindness out there and we've talked to those closest to us maybe and treat them in ways that we would never think of treating somebody else, and that's not acceptable either.
And sometimes I'm frustrated with somebody else and it's easy to take it out on the safe person.
I'll say something hateful to you because the other person, if I said it to them, they might come and knock my head off.
Giving somebody and there not being consequence for the choice the person made.
Yeah.
And I understand forgiveness.
Yeah.
But forgiving somebody of something they did doesn't mean that there's not a consequence to what they did.
Yeah. And you make a great point, because sometimes on the news, you know, some horrendous thing will happen to somebody and they'll say, well, I've forgiven that person. That's all well and good. But that person still needs to face the consequences of their actions. It is biblical, absolutely. And you make an excellent point. So just because I forgive somebody doesn't mean there won't be consequences to their actions. No, absolutely. And the bad thing is, just because I forgive you, it may be that you have a habitual habit and you're going to do the same thing. That doesn't mean I shouldn't forgive you. But the other thing, it may behoove me to change circumstances. That doesn't mean I keep putting myself in the place to be sinned against. There are those circumstances and consequences in changing circumstances. Does that make sense? Thoughts? Yes.
This one is really important, because if you don't take care of this one, then you're ending up on number 3 of the other one, which takes you into bitterness.
Absolutely.
This is just the beginning, and
it will turn into, if you can't forgive, if you can't let go, you will end up being bitter. Yeah.
See, if you put up with this for so long, you should be smart enough to move yourself out so it can't happen anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a far cry between forgiveness and putting up with it again.
Yeah, and there is a difference there that if somebody's habitually doing it, doesn't mean we shouldn't forgive, but that doesn't mean I can't change circumstances. That doesn't mean that I have to subject myself to your sin, to your meanness, whatever it is, and you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. This doesn't mean that God hasn't given us a head to think with and to be smart enough to know that, you know, there are circumstances sometimes that need to be changed for our benefit and for the person's benefit. Does that make sense? Okay. Thoughts? Do be forgiving. We talked about don't be not forgiving. And this is just the positive side of that. Colossians 12:13. Put on, therefore, as elect of God, kind. I use that as forgiving instead of kind, but that's okay. Put on, therefore, as elect of God, holy beloved, bowels of mercy, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering, forbearing one another, forgiving one another. The other one was kind, this one's forgiving. We kind of talked about it. So, thoughts? Do seek peace. You know, sometimes we don't have peace because that's not what we're about. Come on, come on. Romans 14:19. Let us therefore follow after things that make for peace, things wherewith one may edify one another. Sometimes we don't have peace because we don't seek things that are peaceful. Sometimes we're stirring things up and we look around and say there's never peace. You're always upset. Well, maybe it's because of us. We're not following after peaceful things. Go ahead.
I have seen people say, well, I want peace, and what they want is to not have any accountability and not have to show up and say, you're just making me mad and I just want peace.
Yeah.
Which that's not what this is talking about either.
There is verses that talk about accountability when it's appropriate to, you know, there's verses that talk about forgiveness, and we have to put those all in the right place.
And we can't stir things up and then just say, okay, I'll go away, just be peaceful. That doesn't work that way. Does somebody start to say something? Yeah.
I worked with a guy one time, and he thought it was his job. He said he thought it was good to stir things up once in a while. And he just, you know, he said that. You know.
Yeah. I know people like that. I know people who like chaos. They like things stirred up. It gives them a sense of importance. It gives them a sense of, you know, they can't live within themselves. And so when something external is going on, it makes them feel alive. And they are people who like trouble, absolutely. And we who like our peace, that doesn't work very well. Yeah.
I think it gives them that they have power over you because they can. I worked for a company.
Yeah.
The whole company one time that keeps men pitting against themselves. I think they thought you'd work harder trying to make it rough on the next guy.
Yeah, and you are right. Keeping things stirred up gives some people a sense of control, a sense of power over somebody else. Yeah. Other thoughts?
Seeking things that make for peace. Follow peace with all men. Psalms 34:14, depart from evil, do good, seek peace, and pursue it. Seeking it's not enough. Pursue it. Pursue peace. It's an attitude. It's, you know, it's something that we choose. It's a choice. Thoughts? Do think before you speak. Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up angry. We handled some of this on the don't side. But, you know, a soft answer. Have you ever seen somebody that they just seem to have the right answer, a pleasant word, and they know how to deal with trouble things? And somebody else, if it said to somebody else, it could have caused words of bitterness back and forth, but the person just has a knack to say peaceful things, soft answer. Think before you speak. That's a big problem. Sometimes we say it and then we think, oops, I wish I didn't say it. It's too late. Once it's out there, you can always say it later. Think before you speak. I was talking this weekend, and a preacher was talking about preaching, and he had a young preacher in his church, and he was trying to get him to understand that you need to filter what you say. And he was sharing with, you know, what he was about to say, and he stopped, and then he shared some of the things that the young preacher had said. And everybody says, yep, he needs to start filtering. We need to think about it. You know, think about when I get it out there and that person hears it, how are they going to respond? More importantly, though, think this. If that person said it to me, what would be my response? How would I feel if somebody said it to me? Sometimes we think, well, that person deserves it, but when we place it, if it was said to me, it would be different. And having that filter, thinking before we speak, is really important. James 3:13, who is a wise man and endowed with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his work and meekness with wisdom. Who's wise? Those who are wise will know how to think before they speak. We'll have wise conversation. We'll have meekness and wisdom in their conversation. Do the right thing even when others don't or won't. I'm sorry. Was there a hand?
It's okay.
No, go ahead. What do you got?
I was going to say, think before you speak, that sometimes we also grow up, we're a product of how we've been conditioned. And a great example was shared with me one time is that an individual had been, every time that they heard a dog bark, they were in danger. I mean, they had been attacked by a dog. And so one night they were strolling down an alley, and it was at dusk, and they heard what sounded like a very large and very ferocious dog. And so their immediate reaction was to bolt. Had they stopped, looked over their shoulder, they would have seen, yes, it was a big dog. It was very ferocious, and it was mean, but it was behind the linked fence. So it really did not pose any threat whatsoever. And I think it's that type of thing, too, that sometimes we've been in situations, we've just been conditioned, again, if we'd stop and take an assessment of the situation and say, am I really in danger? Or is this the same thing happening again?
And just because,
not the circumstances.
And just because somebody said something, does it really need a response type thing? Absolutely. Excellent point. Thoughts?
Yeah. Well, this will show very good light of myself. But one night, many years ago, we had a youth program, young kids out there, it was called Awana. Kids were out playing after church. And a guy came over to the church and had been drinking. And anyway, he came over and he was irate, he was mad. Kids were making too much noise. You know, it was only 7 or 8 o'clock at night. And the first guy he comes to was the elderly deacon. And he says, can I help you? What's the problem? And this guy was just right in his face, and I thought he was going to hit him. And it wasn't going to happen. I was going to clean this clock. I wasn't going to hit Mr. B, you know. And the pastor came out, and he just very softly says, what's the problem? Can we take care of it? And he just very softly, he didn't raise his voice, he didn't do anything, but he stopped that whole thing right there.
Excellent example, a soft answer. But sometimes we get so narrow-focused that we think there's only one response. Excellent. It's a good example. Other thoughts? Okay.
I believe this is our last one. Do the right thing even when others don't or won't. That, I think, is also a definition of integrity. Brother Hunter talked about integrity this morning in that psalm. I think that talks about what does God expect, and then there was a list of those things that those who dwell in the tabernacle and the holy mountain. And I think that we could take that chapter, that Psalm 15, and just about say that is integrity. And So doing the right thing, even when others don't or won't. Matthew 5:44. But I say unto you, love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you. Pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. How easy is that? But sometimes in relationships, you know, people can use us, and sometimes the best thing we can do is do the right thing. But often what happens, we want to retaliate. So, integrity, doing the right thing, even if others don't or won't. 1 Peter 3:9, not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing, but counterwise blessing, knowing that ye are thereunto called, that ye should inherit a blessing. God knows, right? God is seeing what's going on. Romans 12:17, recompense to no man evil for evil, providing things honest in the sight of all men. And the last one is 1 Thessalonians 5:15, seeing that none render evil for evil unto any man, but ever follow that which is good, both among yourselves and to all men. That's talking about, you know, in church with brothers and sisters in Christ, the household of God. But not only to just, you know, sometimes people say, well, you know, he's a child of God, so I need to treat him well. And then sometimes we treat lost people differently because they act different. Well, this says not rendering evil for evil among yourselves, household of God, and lost people, all men. This isn't always easy to do. You know, I understand it's not easy. But doing the right thing, even when others don't or won't, we are called to doing the right thing. And it is integrity. Thoughts?
When you do those things, even if they do hate you in return, you have peace.
Absolutely.
It's still there.
Absolutely. Yes.
There's also, you know, Paul says, even though don't do all things, even if it's justice for you.
Yeah.
To do something.
Yeah, I mean, we can call it, yeah, it may be, absolutely. It may be just to do something in equal, but that's not necessarily this.
Because it can create
response in return and perpetuate those things, absolutely. You know, two people can't fight.
If you change the pattern, if one person, you know, now there is the refusing to show up in the relationship, and that's not what I'm talking about. But you'd be amazed at how it can change things. Some people make them mad just because you won't get angry with them. Thoughts, comments?
Any last thoughts? Any thoughts on relationships?
Good lessons.